Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. This half hour is presented by Terrence A. Gross of Gross & Schuster Personal Injury Lawyers, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Ruthie C. I'm very excited to be joined this morning by Mr. Terrence A. Gross. Good morning, Terrence.
Good morning. Glad to be with you, although I'm actually in Nashville for Thanksgiving with my family. But in modern technology and cell phones, here I am.
Isn't that just amazing? And congratulations. I know we were talking a little bit during the break on your new news with your family and your trip there in Nashville.
Yeah, we just had a grandbaby Friday, and I'm expecting another one today or tomorrow, so I could double up for Thanksgiving.
Oh, my goodness. How exciting. Two new little turkeys.
Yep, exactly. So today I wanted to talk about a topic that talked about years ago, but you know, it's always worth repeating. And I want to get into the seatbelt law. Most of you know I'm a personal injury lawyer. I've been practicing in Florida, specifically Pensacola, and throughout the Panhandle for 41 years. Excuse me. But with the seatbelt, the law is kind of, it's a civil seatbelt law. Most of us know that if you don't wear a seatbelt, you could get a ticket. That's what we think about all the time. But if you're involved in a car wreck and you're not wearing a seatbelt, there are issues that could come about. Actually, if you do get injured, a jury could actually put a percentage of comparative fault on you, even though you didn't cause the wreck. You did not cause it, but it could take away from your verdict. I can think of a very horrible example that happened in the late 1990s. It happened, what my case, it was another lawyer's case in Milton. And apparently an 18-wheeler had pulled a lady that had hit a lady in the rear that was either off the side of the interstate or pulling off or something like that. But she wasn't wearing her seatbelt. Her face went into the windshield. She had horrible facial injuries. And, of course, we know with common sense that if you're wearing a seatbelt, your face should not go into the windshield. But it did. So the jury awarded the lady a reasonable verdict of $1.1 million. So that was a very reasonable verdict for that case. But they found her 90% at fault for not wearing a seatbelt. So even though she got rear-ended, they took away – I don't know if the jury really knew what the judge was going to do, but after the jury left – the judge took away 90% of the verdict, leaving the plaintiff with less than $200,000 on a horrible injury case, probably not enough to cover the medical bills. So the seatbelt defense is a very dangerous problem in these cases, just depending on the facts and whatever. But ultimately, the insurance company has to prove, they have the burden, if you go to court, they must prove that the injuries were worse for not wearing a seatbelt. So a lot of times my clients may not be wearing a seatbelt. They may get a whiplash to their neck, and that's their injury. They may end up in neck surgery. I think it would be virtually impossible to prove that whether they had a seatbelt or didn't would have made a difference, because if you think about it, a seatbelt not only doesn't secure your head, but if it goes across your chest and your torso, it could actually accentuate a neck injury. We see a lot of neck injuries with people wearing seatbelts because their neck becomes like a fulcrum. And, any medical doctor or scientist worth their salt would have to testify that seatbelts do not diminish neck injuries. So it's going to have to be fact-specific. Maybe a knee injury, would your knee hit the dash? And sometimes these people, a lot of people, like my wife sits with her knees right up. She sits real close to the steering wheel, so her knee is only a half an inch from the dash. So even with the seatbelt, she can have a knee injury. And some people like me sit pretty far back, just depending. So every case is going to be different. If people wanted to text you today to ask a question about this topic or any personal injury topic or call us, how could they do that, Ruthie?
Yes, please do. Give us a call. Send us a text, 437-1620. We would love to hear from you.
Perfect. Perfect. So call or text Ruthie, and then we'll get you on the program. Some people are a little shy, don't want to get on, they could text her. But anyway, so as a lawyer, I have to be an advocate. And part of being a good lawyer is knowing the law. You got to know the law first and use the law to your advantage. And I always have. So years ago, I had these Navy guys. They were celebrating. I think they got their wings, whatever. So they're out driving around, four or five guys in a car. And my guy, the guy I ended up representing, was sitting in the back seat. And then there was a big frontal collision. He was thrown forward with no seatbelt. His face did a face plant on the back of the passenger seat, and he lost three or four of his front top teeth. This guy was very handsome, was pretty much a Tom Cruise lookalike, really. And he had to go through dental implants and all that. And so I went to make the claim for him on a clear liability case, and they brought up the seatbelt defense. And I said to the adjuster, let me fax you the statute. Before you make this dig in here on this argument about not wearing a seatbelt, let me show you the statute. And the statute clearly says that the seatbelt applies to all front seat passengers or to all minors. Well, my guy went in a minor, and he went in the front seat. So in other words, you are not required by law, even today, you are not required by law to wear a seatbelt in the back seat of a car. Now, I'd recommend it. I'd recommend that you do that, but you're not required. So I said their stance was misgiven in that it did not diminish my claim because my client violated no law. Hmm. And they ended up paying me the full value. I ended up getting the full value of that case. For simply that reason. Then I had another odd case. This was really odd. I had a Pensacola family that went to Orlando for Disney and all that, and the father had taken his work van down there. And this work van, like a lot of people do this, they took a regular van that they used it for work, and they took out the back seats. So it was more of a, you know, just storage. Well, when they decided to go to Disney, I don't know why they did this, but I would never dream of doing this, but they actually put two lawn chairs in that open space for a five-mile jaunt. They were only going 5 miles to Disney from where they were staying, and lo and behold, they got in a bad wreck, and the two ladies that were in the lawn chairs in the back of this van got all kinds of injuries, and of course, they tried to argue, well, A, they weren't wearing a seatbelt. Well, my first argument was, well, first of all, there was none available, and once again, it's not required. So a very odd case, and we went back and forth, and eventually I did prevail on that as well, because technically they did not violate any statutes.
Hmm.
So it's an odd situation.
Yes, so there are different circumstances. Terry, I'm so sorry
exactly.
to interrupt. We have a couple questions coming in, unrelated,
sure.
but I figure we'll go ahead and get to those. The first one says, if your neighbor's tree falls on your house, does the neighbor bear any liability?
That's a great question. I can actually answer that. Sometimes I can't answer these questions, but this one I know quite well. If the tree was otherwise looking fairly normal, with no sign of disease or whatever, and then a storm like Sally comes through, then there would be no liability. It's an act of God. There would be no liability on the neighbor. You'd have to use your own homeowner's insurance for any repairs. However, if the tree, you know, because some trees look rotten, I mean, you could look at it and say, well, that tree doesn't look good, and maybe even warn the neighbor about it, then there could be liability. I'll give a good example. After Ivan, my mother-in-law lived, had just an unimproved lot next to her. And after Ivan, a big pine looked like it died. And I ended up writing the owner and said, I appreciate if you remove the tree. If there's a storm and it falls on my mother-in-law's house, you will be liable. And that scared her enough to go ahead and remove the tree. Had she not done that and it had happened, there wouldn't have been liability. So it's based on negligence. But with Sally, I am in charge of our cemetery here in Pensacola in Brownsville and Cervantes. We lost 8 trees. I mean, big trees. We're talking about 100-year-old heritage oaks, water oaks, and live oaks. And they went down in the storm and just made all kinds of mayhem. But they were healthy otherwise. Before, we had no warning that the trees were weak or whatever. But yet, Sally did that, and these things do happen. So it's got to be predicated on notice and negligence. You had another question?
Yes, we did have another question come in, switching gears a little bit. What can I do if the person that hit me doesn't have enough insurance to cover my medical bills? I imagine they're speaking about in a car.
Well, there's not a lot we could do after an accident. It's what you do before. So what a great question, by the way. And a lot of people sometimes get mad at the lawyer, because I get this all the time. Somebody will come into me. They did not cause the wreck. It's clearly that someone else caused the wreck. The person that caused the wreck doesn't have very good coverage. I look at my client's policy. They don't have very good coverage. And I have to look at them and tell them that I cannot pull a rabbit out of the hat, that I'm not a magician. I don't have a magic wand. So if there's just not enough coverage, you're SOL. So the way to conclude that, the way to protect yourself, is before an accident to make sure you have uninsured motorist coverage. It's an add-on. Everybody should have it. I'll fight any agent that wants to fight me. If they want to debate me on the radio, I challenge them. There is no logic to rejecting uninsured motorists. In fact, Florida is what we call a stacking state. So you could actually, if you have 3 vehicles and you have 25,000 of stacking uninsured motorists, you could take your 25 and multiply it times 3 for 75,000, and you're using cars that were not even involved in the wreck to enhance your recovery. I do it all the time. I would say over 50% of my cases that I handle end up being underinsured motorist cases, where we get what we can from the defendant, which may only be 10,000, may only be 25,000. In fact, there's only 2 states, Ruthie, left. There's 2 states in the United States of America that still do not have a mandatory $25,000 limit. One is Florida, and I think the other possibly is Rhode Island. The rest of the states, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, all have mandatory minimums of $25,000 that Florida does not. So you have to protect yourself. I would say 50% of the drivers out there that we see every day, 50% of those cars only have a $10,000 limit. That's all they have, because a lot of people are looking just to be legal, but they just don't want to spend a lot of money on insurance, and they're cheaping out. And meanwhile, if they cause a wreck, no matter what they do to you, their coverage will be limited to $10,000. They kill you, $10,000. Quadriplegic, $10,000. Surgery, $10,000. And people just look at me, you know, their mouth open, and a lot of times, well, I'm going to go talk to another lawyer. Well, go ahead, talk to another lawyer. But if that lawyer tells you anything different, they're disingenuous. They're not being honest, because lawyers are limited by coverage. But a person's driving with only a $10,000 limit, that is not John Rockefeller. That is not Donald Trump driving around with a $10,000 limit, I assure you. It's just somebody barely eking out this life, looking to, you know, to save money. Millionaires don't drive around with a $10,000 limit.
Wow. So that's less than half of the other states that met mandatory minimum here in Florida. Do you foresee that
changing?
We're living
in the dark ages.
Wow. Do you see that changing soon?
Well, that's a great question, Ruthie. It has been for the past 3 legislative sessions. So every March, the legislature meets in Tallahassee. It has been up for vote. So it's not like I don't know. They know about this problem. They know about it. It gets to the floor, and through political committees or whatever, it just doesn't get voted on. And I suspect that the insurance lobby is so big in Tallahassee, because you're not there lobbying for this. I'm not even there lobbying for this. So the insurance companies are. They don't want the exposure. They don't want to be forced to offer $25,000, which means to all the bad drivers. That means all these high-risk carriers that sell the 10, okay, they'll do that. but they don't want to be forced to sell 25,000 to everybody because there are people out there with bad driving records.
So in this case of the caller who texted in and said, you know, is there anything I can do like this? The collision has already occurred. You know, like you said, you'll try to get what you can, but that mandatory minimum is so low that it just might not cover it.
Well, we look at other things. There are exceptions. We, as a lawyer, I'm going to look to see, for instance, let me give you an example. I have looked at my receptionist's car insurance, but I'm sure, you know, she's my receptionist, so I'm sure she doesn't have fantastic coverage. So what if she causes a wreck? So I send her on a bank errand. Go to the bank, make a deposit, and she causes a wreck. Well, when a highway patrolman does the report, he's going to put down her name. He's going to put down her car insurance. Terrence Gross is not going to be mentioned anywhere because the officer's not going to ask, who do you work for? Were you working for Mr. Gross that found this wreck? Those are conversations that never take place because the highway patrolman is not a lawyer. Or an insurance investigator. He's just a highway patrolman. So there could be hidden coverage sometimes because there's something called scope of employment. That's why when we get cases like this where there's only a 10 limit, we immediately send the carrier an affidavit for the driver to fill out. He's got to do a sworn affidavit before notary. And we did one recently where the guy only had a 10 limit driving a junker car. But he was working for one of our pizza places, and there was a $2 million limit there. But you'd never known it had you not asked. So that's one way to do it. The other way is to look at people's uninsured motorists. And uninsured motorists is not only with your coverage, but resident relatives. So what if the person the lawyer's interviewing is a 30-year-old young female that just doesn't really have great coverage? But the lawyer keeps asking questions, who do you live with? And she goes, well, I moved out, but I just got a divorce. I'm living with my mom and dad again. Wait a second. They're resident relatives. We could look at the parents' policy. If she is living with her parents, she could use their uninsured motorist, even though she's not on the policy. All the lawyer would have to prove is, are you related to your parents? And do you live with your parents? That's all we have to prove. You do not have to be on the policy. And if we use the parents' policy, it doesn't increase the rates because Florida is a no-fault state and so forth. So I guess a good lawyer is going to look under every stone, and that's what we do with these big entry cases. I got a fellow right now I'm representing. He was a bicyclist, didn't even own a car, and he got horribly injured, so we're getting the coverage from that fault party, but he also lived with a cousin, and he lived with an uncle. And we're going to use the cousins and the uncles uninsured motorists from their vehicles, even though this guy was not even on their policies. In fact, on one of the policies, he was excluded. His name was mentioned as an excluded driver. But that relates only to liability, not to uninsured motorist coverage.
Wow. All right. So there are some other options out there if you didn't have it yourself. But this wouldn't, you mentioned you have to be related. So this isn't like a roommate situation. This is a relative.
No. Now, we've had these cases. We've had people come in, and maybe they've been living with their girlfriend for 15 years. Well, Florida doesn't have common law marriage. We haven't had common law marriage since the early 70s. So there's no such thing as common law marriage in Florida. So if you're living with this person for 15 years, you have a bunch of children together, and you act and look like a married couple, but you never got married. Well, that's not your relative. The kids are your relatives, but you are not related to this person because it talks about related by blood or marriage. Blood or marriage. So that means if you're with your divorcee, when you're divorcee, a divorce means you're no longer married. So, again, once you get divorced, you're not related.
Very interesting. So maybe this listener would benefit from, of course, giving a call, getting in touch with you, Terrence, and then finding out a little bit more about the particular situation. Maybe there are some options here just because that other motorist was underinsured. Doesn't mean there aren't some options.
I've done it time and time again. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I had this lady that came in. What happened to her was she was in just a residential neighborhood. one of these lawn care guys ran a stop sign with his trailer and his old pickup truck and slammed into her on the side. Her head hit the driver's window. She's wearing a seatbelt, but it was a side impact, and her head slammed against the window, and she had a bad concussion, real bad, and had to be taken to the hospital. Well, the guy that hit her, you know, it's just one of these fly-by-night landscapers. So, you know, he had an old pickup truck and a few lawnmowers, so it wasn't any big company. All he had was a 10,000 limit. Well, I asked the lady, she ended up in brain surgery, by the way. So the next day, she had a hematoma, had to do brain surgery. She was in the hospital, of course, a week. So she's in her 70s, and I started asking her questions. Do you own a car? Yes, I do. Let me see your policy. She showed me, and to her credit, she had 50,000 of uninsured motorists, which was good. But if you have brain surgery, the 10 from the defendant and her 50, that's not enough money. So I said, are you married? She goes, no, I never married. I've never been married. So I said, I presume you don't have any kids. She goes, nope, I have no kids. So I'm thinking, okay, well, then I guess she doesn't have resident relatives. So I asked her one more question, though. I almost quit and asked her one more question. I said, well, who do you live with? She goes, I live with my mother. And I look at her. This lady's like 75. I go,
oh, wow.
You live with your mother? I said, you live with your mother? She goes, yeah. She's 95. I said, well, does mom own a car? She goes, oh, yes, yeah, she owns a car, but she hasn't driven it in 3 years. It's in our carport with a cover over. And I said, well, you think she still has it insured? She goes, oh, my mother would. Yeah, my mother's could always have insurance. So we get a hold of mom's insurance of a car she hasn't driven in 3 years. Her mother had 100,000 of uninsured motorists. I was able to get that.
Oh, wow.
And it was a different company. My lady's name was not on that policy, but all I had to prove was she a resident? Yes. Relative? Yes. I live with my mom, resident relative, and we got the coverage.
Wow.
And I've done
it
time, and I can tell you story after. Yeah, and that's what you got to do. And you got to keep on looking and looking and looking, and there may be ways to get coverage, you know, so. You know, we certainly got off my topic of seatbelts, but how much time do we have on the show?
We've got about two more minutes.
Okay, well, you know, so anyway, but the whole thing, whether it's seatbelts or uninsured motorists, sometimes people think, I could do this myself. No, you can't. I mean, already if you've listened, a lawyer's just going to know more and see more. We do so much more than people think we do. Even at the end of a case, if you owe $60,000 medical bills, we help negotiate each and every bill. I pity the people that have a hospital stay and they're paying $50 a month for the rest of their lives on a bill where a lawyer could probably pick up the phone, call Sacred Heart Baptist or West Florida and negotiate that down for much less. These bills are very negotiable in this business. And we do it all the time for our clients. That's part of what we do. You know, we probably have five or six medical bill paralegals. So this is Terrence Gross. If you wish to call me on any type of legal case, it's very easy in the Pensacola area, 434-3333. We have a great website, grossandschuster.com, and we have a 64-page website. We talk about seatbelts on the website. We talk about uninsured motorists on the website, motorcycle accidents, truck accidents, and so forth. So if you need us, 434-3333. We have five offices. Our main office is Pensacola, but we have Milton, Fort Walton, Crestview, and the bar. Thank you so much, Ruth.